Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. In this hour of the program, we're going to be talking about immigration. We have a lot of territory to cover. The Trump administration has reduced the flow of immigration, legal and illegal immigration, and has done this over the past couple months without any new legislation. Executive orders have been issued. Many of those have been put on hold by the courts. The administration has made it harder to get into this country for all kinds of people, for refugees, visa holders, asylum seekers, illegal border crossers who are arriving at the southern border. Those numbers have all just plummeted over the last few months. We have also heard that the Department of Homeland Security is now laying groundwork to identify more detention beds for immigrants in the country illegally, to set aside money to start designing the border wall, and to speed up the hiring of thousands of federal immigration agents. We're also not sure what the status is of Dreamers. We'll talk about Dreamers and with a Dreamer in our studio here in just a moment. And there are a number of other questions as well. There are people who are concerned about people being here illegally and committing crimes. The Attorney General has talked about the enormous amount of crime that's come across the border, the amount of drugs that have come across the border. And there have been political rallies where family members who have lost loved ones to crimes committed by people who are here illegally. There are not many of those crimes, but they've been front and center in many political gatherings over the course of the election season. So we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to be having three guests with us during the course of the hour. Joseph Rivas is an immigration attorney here in Milwaukee. He has a law degree from UW-Madison, founding president of the Wisconsin Hispanic Lawyers Association, has testified in circuit court proceedings as an expert on immigration law, listed in Best Lawyers in America under the section of immigration law, and we're delighted to have you with us. The name of your law firm is, Joseph?
Hoekstra, McCarthy, Rivas, and Rundy.
And Rundy. Thank you very much. Also joining us, an assumed name we're giving her because of worries about being here not legally and worries about deportation, is Frida. Frida is a student, and she is technically covered by Dreamer, but Dreamer is an executive order, so it's really not a law. So she is concerned about what will be happening with her situation, and she knows many of other students who are in her situation. Thank you very much, Frida, for being with us in our studio. Hello.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you both here. And also joining us later in the hour, we'll be speaking with the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's a think tank in D.C., and they embrace low immigration and pro-immigrant, is what they say, admitting fewer immigrants but affording a warmer welcome for those who are admitted. We will talk with the director as we carry on. Well, let's just start with what's happened in the last few months. Do you see a real change? Are you getting more phone calls from people who are worried about having to leave the United States? Do you feel that the climate, the political climate, has changed in the country, Frida, so that a lot of people are terrified about what's going to happen to them? Give us an overview. Joseph, what's happening in your practice? A lot of calls?
Well, since the elections in November, the day after, my office, and I'm quite sure other attorneys who do immigration work, we have been swamped with inquiries. A lot of people are scared, misinformed, and even people who are here legally, permanent residents, all of a sudden now they want to become citizens and move forward with their naturalization application. So it has been a very, very busy time, and in my over 30 years of practicing immigration law, we have never experienced a time like that we are experiencing now.
Mm-hmm. Frida, how about you? Is it a time of fear for you and students, you know, your family members?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it's a lot of fear. The day after the elections, several centers on our campus at UW-Milwaukee hosted open talks and counseling for different students to be able to just vent. And just walking around campus, people just seemed very, very upset. And then at these different talks or counseling opportunities that these different centers had, there was so many students that they had to get chairs from different centers or from like the union so that students could go and just talk about it and like cry and just be open about all the fear they had. So definitely on my campus and from my point of view, there has been a lot of fear.
Let's talk about the Dreamers to begin the show. What is the status of Dreamers? When did we get a designation of Dreamers? And why does it seem tenuous to you right now? Joseph, what's the status?
It actually goes back to an effort in around 2000 where they wanted to pass legislation. And the word Dream was actually an acronym, and I don't recall the full legislative name, but it was designed and intended for children who were brought here as minors by their parents, made no decision on their own to come into this country, and many of them, like Frida, grew up here thinking that the United States was their country of birth, and then realizing that they were not legal, and so they appeared to be some kind of a victim in this process, and so there was legislation attempted to provide legal status for these students, and the name Dream has stuck with them. So whenever we talk about Dreamers, we're talking about these youth who are brought here by their family and grew up here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And yet the president has said recently that, I'm trying to find his exact quote here, but he's talked about Dreamers as being wonderful people. The Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly, we're not targeting Dreamers. He said the president's talked about these wonderful people who are Dreamers. Doesn't that give you some assurance, Frida?
It doesn't, because as we know, the Trump administration and Trump has been very tangible with his words. So he may say that, but there's no real sense of protection, because at the end of the day, it's his word controls everything. So him saying, you know, DACA isn't a thing anymore, then that puts everyone at risk.
So what you need is for Congress to pass legislation.
Which, yes, that's definitely, that would give more assurance to any Dreamer, and that would really be protection. That would be everything.
And yet President Obama was not able to do that.
Yeah, so it's a struggle, and it's very hard, because I came when I was 2 years old, and I say I came, but my parents brought me here when I was 2 years old. I had no say, and I don't remember anything about Mexico. So this has been my country, but how am I supposed to be sure of anything when anything can go away just by him saying DACA isn't going to be implemented anymore?
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about what that would mean for your family, too. I would imagine you live here. You live here. You're embedded in the American way, and to go back to Mexico would be a very difficult thing. What about, and we'll hear from our guest a little bit later, much has been made of people coming from across the border, bringing drugs, bringing criminal gangs, creating huge problems with crime in cities all over the country. Is there any truth to that, Joseph?
Well, let me put it this way. Every city, every municipality, every county, every state, even the federal government, we have jails. Because no matter where you find a group of people, part of that population, there are going to be those who violate the law and not honor the law, and they break the law. So any group of people that you have, some of them are going to be violators. And that's the same thing with the undocumented. The large majority of them are not criminals, but are there criminals in that population? Absolutely. And I don't think any American citizen, which includes me, wants those kinds of people here. Go after the drug dealers. Go after the sexual offenders. Go after the criminals. And remove them from the United States if you can after you incarcerate them.
Mm-hmm. And yet the studies have shown, and there have been a lot of different studies using different methodologies, have found immigrants are less likely than native-born to engage in either violent or nonviolent antisocial behavior. Immigrants less likely than native-born to be repeat offenders among high-risk adolescents, and immigrant youth who were students in the U.S. in middle and high schools in the mid-90s and are now young adults have among the lowest delinquency rates of all young people.
Well, that goes to my classic definition of an immigrant. Immigrants who come to the United States appreciate being part of the society in the United States. Having come from a country where they don't have everything that we enjoy here, I travel a lot. I've gone to other countries. And believe it or not, whenever I return to the United States, I kiss the ground because I know how good I have it here. You don't appreciate that until you've gone to Central America or South America, and there's a soldier walking with a rifle and just walking around the streets, because we're not used to seeing that here in the United States. And so I appreciate that. And I think immigrants who come here, new families that come here, we need the fresh blood all the time, because after a while it gets kind of stale. And people become kind of lazy and content. And so we need the immigrants to refreshen us.
We're all immigrants. You know, all of us. We came from different parts of the world. The Native Americans were the only people who were here before any of us arrived, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Why did your parents come here, Frida?
My parents came here for the general reason. They just wanted a better life for all of us. They just wanted a better economic life. They wanted to give us an opportunity that they didn't have. My mom didn't go past the fifth grade. My dad didn't go past, like, the sixth or seventh grade. I now go to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and my dream is to go to either grad school or law school. So just by them bringing me here, growing up in a small town and knowing that there were possibilities here has already made their dream possible, because I've already gone twice as far as whatever I could have gone in Mexico.
Do your parents worry about having to leave?
My parents do worry, but I think that they have to hold up, like, a strong face for me and for my family, and they have to show that we'll be successful anywhere, but we really do just want to be successful here. So they know that it is going to be hard, and it has been getting much more difficult, but they also know that we are dreamers, and that we will dream and achieve, hopefully here, because this is where we have been and this is where we love to be, but somehow we'll somehow make it work.
Mm-hmm. Joseph, explain for me, please. There's been this ruling from a district judge in California that put a block on the Trump administration's withholding of funds for sanctuary cities all over the country. And the president has said he'll take this now to the Supreme Court. Can you tell me what this means? If you are in Milwaukee, which is a sanctuary city, the police department is not cooperating with ISIS, so you're not finding out what a country of origin is from somebody you're stopping, and you would not be turned over to federal authorities? What's the story?
Well, the concept of sanctuary cities, it means that the local municipality is not going to do the federal government's work. And the executive order was to say it's basically like an unfunded mandate. And so the judge said, no, you can't do that, and we have separation of powers. And, you know, the states do what they do, the federal government does what they do, and you can't impose your will upon other aspects of the government.
Mm-hmm. And going to the Supreme Court, do you want to make some kind of guess? If we have now a 5-4 court, which maybe we do you think that not only the travel ban, but this will be upheld by the current Supreme Court?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, we had a similar experience with the Affordable Health Care Act. Many times that was challenged and taken to the Supreme Court, and Supreme Court, which I would say leaned toward the right, justified it. It says it is the law, so it depends how they're going to interpret the law. And so we'll just have to see when we get there.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think would be a fair immigration policy. I mean, this is something this country has struggled with for a long, long time. Do you think, Frida, we should have open borders for all? Do we need to look at how many people come from certain countries? Will we look at skilled workers? How do we decide? Do we put a priority on asylum seekers?
I think that's obviously a difficult question, because it hasn't been able to be answered in how many years. But I think that if we were to be able to have DACA and DAPA a possibility, like DACA and DAPA, something official rather than
What's DAPA?
DAPA is Deferred Action for Parenthood Arrivals.
Oh.
So it pretty much just means that if, like me as a DACA, then my parents would also have that same coverage kind of thing. So I think that having that opportunity, obviously doing like background checks and making sure that the people that have been here, let them be part of this country. Let them be residents, citizens, green card holders. You know, let them have that opportunity. And if you find something in their background, if you find criminal acts or violent acts, then don't let them and take them out of the country. But somehow, even though I have never committed a crime, I've never been in prison, I've never done anything really bad, somehow I am still a target. So I think somehow that has to be solved, and it would be solved through that.
Joseph, what do you think?
I mean, what we really need is comprehensive immigration reform. I think there's no question about it. The immigration law is broken. It needs to be fixed. The law that we are dealing with today is technically called the Immigration and Nationality Act of 1952.
52?
It's a very old law. We have had tweaks on it. They fixed it or tried to fix part of it in 1965. Another one came in 1986 and 1990 and 2000. They tried to fix it in piecemeal, and I understand, because if you can't fix it all, at least do something. But we have all these different pieces involved here, and we need to repair and fix the whole thing and to make it work. Once we have a good, viable immigration law system, then we have to decide what do we want to do between with the 11 to 14 million that are undocumented. Do we give them amnesty? Do we deport them all? Or do we go somewhere in between? And I think that's where we're running into the difficulty. What do we do about those people? Because some people will argue they broke the law and they shouldn't be rewarded for it by skipping ahead of the line, what have you. Mm-hmm. So that's where it becomes a difficult political decision.
Yeah. You told me that you were seeing parents who are worried that maybe they will be separated from their children. So you're seeing an increase in the number of people who are trying to find guardians for their children?
Well, yes. I volunteer at a clinic, and we're seeing many of these parents who have children that were born here, and these children are U.S. citizens. And they're worried that they're going to be apprehended at their place of employment or if they go to the grocery store. So we're putting together like power of attorney documents, and it's under our Wisconsin statutes, chapter 48.9, I believe, where they can designate somebody to take power of attorney of their child, give them their passports, because they ultimately want their children to join them. But, you know, if they're apprehended and placed into detention and removed, first of all, you're going to have social services coming in, taking temporary custody of these kids. So we're trying to prevent a lot of that happening. And we've seen a surge of this since the elections.
Mm-hmm. And we have seen cases of mothers and fathers being separated from their children, right?
Exactly. Yes.
We welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about immigration this hour of the program and the many aspects of immigration. We will be continuing, and our third guest will join us for a little while, and then we'll have everybody together. Mark Krikorian is Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's a think tank in Washington, D.C. Their motto is low immigration, pro-immigrant. We'll talk about what that means and the work that they're doing. We may take a couple phone calls for Frieda and Joseph before we go to him. So here's our number. If you want to talk to them, please call right now, would you? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. We'd like to read your messages on our Facebook page as well, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network. Our number is 800-486-8655, and let's take a couple phone calls before we meet our third guest. Richard in Wauwatosa is our first caller for you. Richard, go ahead.
Yes, I just had a couple of questions. Like, if the Mexican immigrants are so worried about getting caught, I'm sorry, illegal immigrants, if they're so worried about getting caught and they've been here for so long and they've built families, why have they not focused on their legalization? I don't get that. I mean, if you're going to be here for 10, 15, 25 years, don't you think that'd be kind of some relevance to your status? I absolutely love the Mexican culture, by the way. It's an amazing culture, and I would hate to see people get deported in the masses, but it really is illegal what they're doing. It's not undocumented. It's illegal.
So you think? What do you think about Frida? You think she should be sent back to Mexico?
Huh?
What do you think about our guest Frida? Should she be sent back to Mexico? She's lived her whole life here.
How long is her whole life?
19.
19. So your parents had what? Roughly 16 years to figure out their immigration status.
Well, let's talk about how you figure out your immigration status. Joseph, they had 19 years.
I get that question asked a lot, and the difficulty is that if there was a legal way for them to emigrate, that family would have done so a long time ago. But the problem is that there isn't a legal way. You have to have, there's only one way to emigrate to the United States, and you have to have a petitioner file for you. There's a family base and a business base. But you have to have a family member that's a U.S. citizen, whether it's a parent, brother or sister, or a child over 21, who will file a petition for you to sponsor your immigration. So if you have an entire family here and you don't have that qualifying petitioner, there's no legal way for you to emigrate to the United States, which goes back to why we have to repair the immigration law system.
Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Saeed in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, Saeed. That's fine. I'm calling to basically agree with you that the immigration laws are in an absolute mess, for which both parties, both Republican and Democrats, bear significant responsibility. I'm a naturalized U.S. citizen. The president who signed my naturalization papers was Ronald Reagan, who gave amnesty to the people who were undocumented at that time. Decades later, we're in the same exact spot because we did not reform our immigration laws. Our immigration laws, first of all, the INS is the only segment of government whose clients don't vote, number one. That has implications. Second, without fixing our immigration laws, even if we give amnesty to all the people that are here now that we should, we'll still be in the same position decades from now.
Joseph.
I was around in 1986 when President Reagan enacted the Immigration Reform and Control Act of 1986, and that provided legalization for folks who were here before 1982. And so in 1986, you had 4 years of undocumented nationals that weren't covered by it, and so the system really wasn't repaired. And so we fixed some of it, but not all of it. Along with the 86 legislation, we came out with the I-9 form, where the employer has to get documentation from you to be employed in the United States. And there were other measures that came along with the 86, but then that was just a temporary fix. It really wasn't a comprehensive reform of the entire immigration system.
Mm-hmm. And I think polls overwhelmingly show that in your case, Frida, people really believe that you should be allowed to stay here. People are in favor of those who have been here for a long period of time, who are undocumented, to be able to stay here in America, right?
But there are those who, like, that will label Frida as an illegal.
Right.
Because
illegal alien.
Yeah, that means that it's criminal to be undocumented in the United States. If a person has been deported from the United States, that is not a criminal conviction. It is a civil proceeding. And because it's a civil proceeding, you do not have a right to an attorney, and one will not be appointed for you. And so anybody who has been deported, that's when the family contacts me. And then I go through the proper paperwork and do the pardons and everything and bring them back to the United States because there's no criminal conviction, there's no criminal proceeding involved in deportation.
Mm. But if wasn't that part of the latest order of some kind that the administration wanted to make it criminal, a felony for you if you had been deported to reenter?
There is. That's in the law right now. If you have been deported and then you sneak back in, you can be prosecuted criminally after you have been deported.
Joining us now, we have another voice among those joining us this hour. Mark Krikorian is Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's a think tank in Washington, D.C., and they embrace low immigration and pro-immigrant, believe in admitting fewer immigrants but affording a warmer welcome for those who are admitted. Mark, thank you very much for joining our conversation. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So would you agree that our immigration system is pretty darn broken and we need to figure all of this out?
Well, I mean, in a sense, yes, but broken, what's broken about it? That's the key issue. The comments about the fallout of the 1986 law 30 years ago, I think were off the mark, because the problem with the 1986 law that literally persists today, that it casts a shadow even today, as was said by a senator during the immigration debate a few years back, is that that law was a deal, just like the comprehensive immigration reform proposals that have come up over the past few years. The deal was legalization for illegal immigrants who'd been here for some period of time, basically those who would put some roots down, that was the point,
mm-hmm.
in exchange for, back in 1986, making it illegal for the first time ever to employ illegal immigrants. Before that, businesses had been given a loophole that allowed them to get off the hook when they employed illegal immigrants. So it was tough enforcement, so in the future, there wouldn't be more illegal immigration. That was the thinking. Tie up the loose ends and go forward with tougher rules so we won't have more illegal immigration. The problem is that the amnesty part happened. 3 million people got green cards, but the enforcement never did. So it was a kind of trick. And in fact, I know it was a trick. The people who were pushing the amnesty never intended to promote enforcement after the amnesty happened. And so that's the key problem. That's why President Bush's amnesty push failed. That's why President Obama's a few years back failed, because it was the same kind of deal. Legalization up front in exchange for promises of enforcement down the road. And so the only way to fix that is to flip it around.
Well,
the enforcement stuff has to come first. And then I actually am for legalization of lots of illegals who have been here a long time and aren't, you know, drug dealers or killers, and do it quick, rip off the Band-Aid, get it over with. But it has to be the last amnesty, not just the next one in a series of amnesties.
So you're saying that enforcement, you're talking about people who are employing those who are here illegally, that part wasn't working?
That part wasn't enforced. Both Congress, both Republicans and Democrats, administrations, both Republicans and Democrats, interest groups, both on the right and the left, all conspired to make the ban on hiring illegals meaningless and
right.
to gut enforcement. It's not that hard to do. It's just that you have to want to do it.
Isn't it, though, hard to do? Isn't it so woven into the American economy and farm workers and people who are maids in this country, fast service workers? People are here illegally and working in huge numbers in this country.
Yeah, there are 7 or 8 million illegal immigrants in the workforce. There's more illegal immigrants than that, but they're, you know, moms at home or kids or old people, whatever it is. So, but of the illegal immigrants who are here, 11 or 12 million, 7 or 8 million have jobs. So it's a lot of people. There's no question about it. And if all of them were going to, like, disappear tomorrow, that would be extremely disruptive. But that's why the enforcement measures we need to put in place are ones that, generally speaking, would be affect new illegals or people who get involved in crimes. And specifically about the new illegals, two things that have to be up and running before we can have a debate about legalization. One is something called E-Verify. It's an online system. So when you hire somebody and they give you the Social Security number, name, date of birth, you have to do that anyway and send it into Social Security, you just check online to make sure it's real and they're not lying to you. Half of people who were hired last year were screened through that, but it's still voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
The other half have to be included in it. And that only goes after new hires. So it doesn't drive out most of the illegals who are working. And the other thing, quickly, is visa tracking. Because about half of the new illegal immigrants who come here every day, about 1,000 illegal immigrants settle in the United States every day, half of them come in as tourists or something like that, some kind of temporary visa, and then just never leave. And
mm-hmm.
we have no checkout system for foreign visitors. And if you don't check them out, you don't know who's here. So those two things have to be in place. They've been promised for years, decades. They have to be in place and functioning before we talk about legalizing people so we don't end up with another 11 million illegal immigrants down the road.
Mark, I want you to address Frida's case. Frida is here in our studios, and she came here when she was 2 years old. Her parents came to America in search of a better life. She wants to be a lawyer. She's a student now at a university here in Milwaukee. She doesn't know what her status is going to be because it's, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Dreamers. So there's a great deal of fear on the part of Frida and her family and other students that she knows who are in similar situations. They don't know what tomorrow may bring. What should happen with Dreamers?
Well, I assume she's a DACA, right, Frida?
Yes.
Yeah. So she has a work permit and a Social Security number and presumably a driver's license, that sort of thing. So she's basically been legalized, but it's a temporary legalization. I'm actually for legalizing people who came here very young. There's a strong argument to make that someone who came as an adult is a different situation. They knew what they were doing. someone who came here as a child, and the cutoff now is 16 years old, I think that's a little too old, needs to be like 10, 7 or 10 years old. But if you've come that early, you've gone to most of your schooling in the United States, your psychological and emotional attachments have basically been formed here, and I think there's a case to make for amnestying them up front even before some of these enforcement measures are in place. But it cannot happen without also at the same time passing some of these enforcement measures, because otherwise you're just going to create a magnet for more illegal immigration. There was a legislation called the DREAM Act, actually voted down by the Democratic Congress. Nancy Pelosi's, when she was Speaker of the House, she couldn't get that through the House of Representatives. So this is not, I mean, this is something the Obama administration actually chose not to push until the very end when they lost the majority in the House and they failed. That legislation would have been kind of a freestanding amnesty for the Dreamers. There would have been no offsetting measures like, say, making e-verify mandatory for all employers. In other words, there has to be part of at least a smaller package. There can't be just a freestanding amnesty for the Dreamers. It has to be part of a package that includes enforcement.
All right. Well, and one more question for you before we go back to phone calls and get response from our guests. What about, how do you reconcile all of this with who we are as a nation? I mean, Frieda had talked about her parents coming here to search for a better life. They wanted to make more money. The times were hard where they were from. My ancestors came from Ireland. There was a famine there. They had to live. We all came from someplace else. People are coming to the United States from Eritrea, from African countries, from Central America, from all over the world. Some have been persecuted, and some just look at the dream of America. It's represented so much to immigrants for ever since we were founded. How do you reconcile restrictions on that dream?
We have restrictions now. We take in 1 million people a year, but that's not because only 1 million people want to come here. That's because we have limits, restrictions. There are literally hundreds of millions of people who would move here if they wanted to. I'm reminded of President Jimmy Carter's conversation with Deng Xiaoping, head of China, back in the late 70s. And he criticized Deng Xiaoping for limits on the ability of Chinese to leave the country. It's loosened up since then, but back then it was hard to leave. He said, "You have to allow free emigration, Mr. Deng. And Deng Xiaoping looked at the president and said, "Well, how many do you want? 10 million, 20 million, 30 million? Because I got them." We have limits. The question is not, are we going to limit immigration? The question is, what should the limit be and how do we limit it? There's no way we're going to go back to the 150 years ago where we didn't have statutory numerical caps, but the immigration was limited anyway by the oceans. It's not limited by the oceans anymore. You can be anywhere in the world in a few hours. And we have to have numerical caps. We have them now. And the question is, what should they be? Should we have 2 million a year? Should we have 500,000 a year? It's a legitimate debate to have. But you can't just say, well, look at the Statue of Liberty. That means your argument is wrong. That's a silly way of debating it, I'm afraid.
Let's go to more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Joining the conversation just now is Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of the Center for Immigration Studies, a think tank in D.C., joining us in our studios, Frieda. That's a pseudonym for her. She is a dreamer, and she is a student here in Milwaukee. Joseph Rivas is an immigration attorney at Hochstetter, McCarthy, Rivas, and Rundy in Milwaukee. And let us go next to Matt in Madison. Hi, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. I just had a quick question for the attorney. He was talking about undocumented people who are looking for, you know, guardians and things like that. Is there something like a program, if you're sympathetic to their needs, you can sign up to get matched and help people out or anything like that? That's still my only question.
Okay. Joseph?
I'm not familiar with a program like that, but it does sound like a good idea, where nonprofit organizations or church organizations may want to come and volunteer for that. Wow, that's a good idea.
Mm. All right, Matt, you may have started something.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much for your call. I want to give the three of you a chance to respond to what each other has said, too. Frieda, Joseph, do you want to respond to anything that Mark has just said? Frieda?
I just wanted to say that someone mentioned earlier that, like, why don't you just get legalized? If you've been here 19 years or whatever, why don't you just get legalized? It's not so simple, and I just want to have that laid out. The only opportunity I had for quote-unquote legalization, but it really isn't legalization at all, is DACA. And as soon as that was implemented, as soon as that executive order was passed, I was trying to get that passed. Like, as soon as that was passed, I was already in a law office or in a notary's office trying to get my application ready and filed, which is an application about almost $500 worth application that I, as a high school student, had to come up with to get my DACA passed. So I just wanted to mention that it's not simple, and as soon as I had that opportunity, I personally took that opportunity, even if it was out of my economic area.
Mm-hmm. Let me talk about DACA, because I think there's such a misunderstanding. It's an old provision in the law and in the regulations. Whenever Homeland Security or ICE apprehended an undocumented person, very much like your city attorney or your district attorney, these enforcers of the law have a lot of authority with the prosecution of a case. And many times in the old days, when I say in the old days, if someone got apprehended, ICE would look at the person and interview them. And sometimes there's a compelling reason not to really deport them out of the country. Maybe they're on this waiting list, and now it's going to come forward in 5 or 6 months. So the Homeland Security and ICE had the authority to defer action on you. They can hold it open for a year, have you come back, review your case. And so that was called deferred action. And when you had that status, you could get a work permit, mm-hmm. get a social security number, and get a driver's mm-hmm. license, and every year you would come back. What Obama did, because I believe he was so frustrated there wasn't any type of legislation coming forward, he came up with this Band-Aid, and he called it Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and mm-hmm. that's where the DACA term comes from. But it is a system that he systematized. He says, I'll do this for every 2 years. I'm going to make it available for those between the age of 16 and under 31. You can't have a felony conviction or more than 3 misdemeanors. You can't have a DUI. And so he put quite a few parameters on there. And primarily, if you're a person of good moral character, he would give you this temporary measure. Right. And so that was something that was renewed every 2 years. And when the election was coming, and when Trump was saying that he was going to eliminate DACA when he became president, that's when all this fear started to come about. Mm-hmm. Obama also came out with a DAPA program, and that was for the parents of these undocumented. If they were parents and they had children that were born here in the United States, so their children were citizens, and he came up with a DAPA program, but that was stopped with a federal lawsuit and went all the way to the Supreme Court and never got any forward action on it.
Hmm. So what we need, Mark, is more than executive orders, either from Obama or from Trump, on what's going to happen with people or their lives. Or they're going to be worried for a long time about where they're going to be, where they can live.
Well, true, but I mean, executive orders have their place. It's just that they have to be executive orders. They're lawful. President Obama's executive order creating DACA was unlawful. Because he did not, on a case-by-case, individual basis, say, well, in your individual case, we'll look at you. What he did is he created an entire qualifications for an entire class of people and then gave them work permits and Social Security numbers. That's why the equivalent program, the one that's called that's DAPA that he was referred to, was held up in court. If the DACA program were actually, you know, challenged in court, it would also be struck down. It's clearly illegal. But having done it, it's kind of, you know, it's created hundreds of thousands of people with work permits, and President Trump basically inherited this problem that Obama created. And he created it because, yes, he was frustrated that the Congress wasn't passing an amnesty, but the president doesn't just get to do whatever he wants just because he doesn't get... Congress doesn't pass a law. I mean, if Congress doesn't pass a law, that's an action, a decision by Congress not to do something. The president does not have the right to just go ahead and do it if Congress doesn't do it. And one point I wanted to bring up about this idea that illegal immigrants or immigrants come here sometimes illegally because there's no way for them to come legally. Well, that's the way it is. There's a million legal immigrants are allowed in every year, and if you're 1,000,001, you know, you don't get to come in legally, and you don't have the right to say, well, I was kept out, so I got to sneak in. I mean, if a concert venue holds 1,000 people, and you're 1,001, and there's no ticket for you, you don't get to just break in. You just don't. And that's, I mean, illegal immigration is illegal for a reason. If you think the limits on immigration should be changed, try to get Congress to change them. In the meantime, you don't get to say, I can ignore these until Congress does something different.
No. Let's talk about how some of the people who are here illegally have been portrayed, and if you see a problem with this. This issue has become highly political, as you well know. We have the Attorney General who has talked about the vast amount of criminal activity that's come across the border, all of the drugs, the thugs. The President on campaign rallies has had people whose family members have been victims a very serious, horrendous crime committed by those who are here illegally. And yet, when you look at the crime statistics, and these are all kinds of different studies using different methodology, overall, immigrants less likely than native-born to engage in violent or nonviolent antisocial behavior. Do you worry, Mark, that we're painting immigrants with this really broad, negative kind of stroke that's making them more fearful, quite frankly?
I mean, there's a real possibility of that. Anytime you talk about policy issues like this, you're talking about crime and immigration, things that affect people. But, you know, the fact is that one crime committed by an illegal immigrant is one crime too many. I mean, the people who are here illegally aren't supposed to be here, so it doesn't matter what the crime rate is. And what's most outrageous, and this is the thing that usually these stories that you hear about in the media are about, not just a regular immigrant who committed a crime, not even just a regular illegal immigrant who committed a crime, but someone who was arrested, an illegal immigrant who was arrested for, say, beating his girlfriend or driving drunk and was let go even though the immigration authorities asked for him to be handed over. In other words, sanctuary cities let them go, and then they went on and committed more crimes. That there is no excuse for, and that's something that, you know, we have to talk about publicly. Frankly, much of the political class has wanted to suppress that or not talk about it, but, you know, too bad. I mean,
Joseph,
something has to get talked about. If somebody says all immigrants are terrible and they're coming here to rape your daughter, well, that's nonsense. That's a lie, and it's not true. But there are, in fact, a significant number of illegal immigrant criminals who should not be here, and when they're taken into custody, they have to be removed. If they're not, then it's the government's fault, partly, for the crimes that they then go commit later.
Let's get a response from Joseph.
Well, I mean, if I have one U.S. citizen who commits an aggravated crime, that's one too many. And so we're not looking at their immigration status. We're looking at how the legal system is not really functioning correctly, whether they're undocumented or documented. And if somebody beats up his wife and the court system lets that person go, it doesn't matter what their immigration status. There's a problem with the system altogether, and we need to be working on that.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655. We're talking immigration, many aspects of immigration, this hour of the show here on the Ideas Network. Ted from La Crosse, the next caller. Hi, Ted.
Hello.
Hello, Ted.
I just have one comment on the immigration issue, and that my wife came here about 10 years ago on a K-1 visa, I believe it is, and we've since been trying to bring her adult daughter here. She's finished college. We've applied for, you know, applied the appropriate paperwork. It's been about 5 years. Ooh. And we anticipate it's an additional 5-year wait for the number of visas, just like they've been saying. They only issue so many visas, and that's the problem. I guess when I hear people coming here illegally and then they're being allowed to stay, you know, it rubs me a little bit the wrong way, thinking that you go through all the proper channels, and to have a family reunited is a 10-year wait. that seems extreme to me.
Well, that does seem extreme. It seems extreme. And you hear cases of that. People have to wait years and years to be with family members, Joseph.
And that supports the argument why this Act of 1952 needs to be repaired. All you have to do is go to the Department of State website and type in visa bulletin. And then you will see the waiting list for the various categories, both for the family and the employment base. And waiting all these years, I think, is ridiculous if you want family unity. The law has to be fixed in that regard. And I can understand that gentleman from La Crosse saying, I'm doing this legally and I'm doing it the right way. But the people who came here illegally perhaps have other personal matters. It's not easy to leave your country and come to the United States and be involved in a culture that's totally different, a different language, and you're under the shadows all of the time. The push for you to come here has to be awfully compelling for you to take that entire risk and not getting paid a full salary or a full wage because your employer takes advantage of you. You have to look at each person and each case individually. And when I meet with my clients, I talk to them, and I'm involved in the people work, and I look at their eyes, and I understand what they're doing because our grandparents and our ancestors went through that same situation. And so, again, this is why we need to fix this.
And thanks very much for the call. One more phone call. Remy, I believe, in Black River Falls. Hi, Remy.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. A previous caller had asked about ways to volunteer, and I wanted to let you know about a program of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. It's called AMPARO, A-M-M-P-A-R-O, and it's designed for people to accompany migrant minors as they go through the court proceedings and things like that. So they can just Google that and find out information about volunteering.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Well, one thing that everybody can agree on is we need to fix a system in this country that it is broken. We're functioning under executive order, and nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. And it's not fair for Frida's family to live in fear, and it's not fair for people not to know what their future is going to be. So I guess the question is, Mark, is Congress going to do their job and take up this issue and deal with it?
Well, they have before, and they couldn't agree. I mean, and the reason they couldn't agree is not because Congress is uniquely incompetent or bad. It's because there is real difference of opinion about this issue. The fact is, if everybody who has a relative gets to bring the relative here, then you don't have immigration limits. You have, you know, consistently increasing. You'll have 2 million people next year and 3 million people next year. I mean, we have immigration limits for a reason.
I understand, but isn't it their job to figure it out so it's not the mess that it is?
Yeah, but it's their job to debate and try to come to an agreement, and when there is no agreement, then you don't have agreement. In other words, the law remains in place until people can come to a consensus.
Right.
I mean, I could just as well ask, why doesn't Senator Chuck Schumer, agree to cut immigration by 50%, which I think is needed? Well, he'd say, well, no, that's wrong. I want to double immigration. Well, I don't. And then you're at an impasse. I mean, that's the key problem here.
I understand what you're saying, but we certainly elected these people to do a job on this particular issue. Do you see hope, Joseph?
No, I don't. And
nobody sees hope.
You know, we're very familiar with our court system, and, you know, we have a jury, and we lock them up and tell them, you don't come out until you have a verdict.
Right.
And you sit there for hours or even days you figure this out.
Yes.
I wish we could do that with our Congress. Put them behind closed doors and tell them you're not coming out, and you're going to have to use that word compromise. And work at it and work at it. And if you don't, you know, we're going to put you back in there. I think they'll come out with something. It's not going to be perfect. No one's going to be happy with it. But a perfect compromise is when both sides are unhappy with it.
Mm. Thank you all very much. Very interesting conversation. Joseph Rivas, immigration attorney here in Milwaukee. Mark Kerkorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies think tank in D.C. Thank you, Mark, very much.
Thank you.
For being with us. And Frida, all the best to you. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to Colleen Leahy.